Wednesday, February 12th, began with the arrival of the Douglas Humes at 10:40 this morning. We met them out at the helicopter pad. Mrs. Douglas Hume, tall and composed and very pleasant looking in a green suit, landed amid the drifting snow that always comes down after a helicopter has landed in the snow. I almost forgot to give her the big bouquet of roses I was carrying for her. We made our way down the line of assorted greeting committee, shaking hands, and then went through the White House and up to the front portico. There, and it really was a beautifully dramatic place for a welcoming ceremony. Out in front were all the 50 flags of our states flapping snappily in the breeze, military men at attention, the two national anthems, a group of interested sightseers. Later on that I found out that they were a women's commission waiting to see my husband, craning their necks over on the left side, and the British and American parties. What would we do without those people that go around pinning down on the floor, or rather pasting down on the floor, your proper name tags at exactly the spot where you're to stand? It makes things so simple for us. Prime Minister Hume, whose dignity and also sense of amusement seems undaunted by the possibility, almost a certainty, that he will be ousted at the next election, which will take place within the next 5 months, made a pleasant and adequate speech, and so did Lyndon. And then we bid them goodbye and dispatched them into their limousines, and they drove off into the frosty air. Then I walked over to the fifth room, where the Citizens Advisory Council on the Status of Women was holding its session and waiting to meet Lyndon. Saw a lot of old friends, Margaret Hickey, senior editor of Ladies' Home Journal, the ubiquitous Esther Peterson, and Anna Roosevelt Halstead, daughter of President Roosevelt. This is what is sort of left over from the President Kennedy's Commission on the Status of Women. Was there ever a commission or committee that really came to a dead end? This one now is making its business trying to locate and recommend useful, talented women for possible use in government. I shook hands all round and took the opportunity to ask Anna if she would drop over for a cup of tea, which she did. About 4:30 that afternoon, Billy Marcus of Dallas arrived after having done a tour of the White House with Wendy, and right very soon behind her, Anna Roosevelt Halstead. We sat down to tea and good conversation. Mrs. Halstead told me how she had come to spend the last year and a half of her father's life here in the White House with him, and I gather it was sort of to fill in the needs for him that only a member of a family could do. She said she lived in the Lincoln Room while she was here, and that the room next door had been the room for her little boy, who I gathered at that time was some 5 or 6, Sisty and Buzzy, the older children, the much better known children, the youngsters of the President Roosevelt's early days, were already out and gone school. And the Lincoln furniture itself, it appears, was in a room right off of where one gets off the second floor elevator, what is now apparently the dining room. I gather that there was no petition there at that time. But she's an interesting, vital person, and it was hard to keep her pinned down to reminiscences of the Roosevelt days, which is what I really wanted to do best, except the one thing she said. After a certain encounter with her father, she said she looked up at him and laughed, said, "Father, you can relax. I'm taking no notes, and I'll never write a book." Then she told us about how she had spent about 4 years with her husband in Iran on, I believe it was a medical Fulbright scholarship with which he worked in the hospitals and in the villages. Her picture was not too encouraging, although she admitted she believed that the Shah was trying, but she thought the obstacles apparently were pretty darn heavy against him. For one thing, there was one time when she, after having been treated very hospitably and royally, had returned home to the United States on a visit. And in the meantime, her mother, the traveling Mrs. Roosevelt, had gone to Israel and made a speech in which she made some mighty highly complimentary remarks about Israel and some not so complimentary about the semi-police state of Iran. And when Anna got back, she was told that she was not welcome. I suppose you'd get as many different pictures of it as people that you talk to. It was fun having an hour or so visit with her and Billy, although I hardly got any word edgewise with Billy about Dallas and our few friends there, but enough to hear her say how fond she was of Lucy and how close Lucy and Wendy had grown. Later on, the Bill Whites came for dinner, and we sat around and had a good talk about his book and about Lyndon's reasons for having started going to church. My reason being, my reason being quite simply that he knew that anybody who lived in the house he lived in and sat at the desk he sat at needed help more than man's. And oddly enough, the second reason was that nobody could any longer accuse him of going to church for political reasons, of being a demagogue, because he was already there. He was already at the top, so to speak. Bill added, and this was funny coming from Bill, and I think there's another reason. I think he wants to set a good example. Fine and laudable reason, but hardly what I'd expected from Bill. As always, it was one of the most relaxed and pleasant evenings we ever have with just them. It's difficult to find a couple that is equally stimulating, both the man and the wife, and that you can feel utterly free and easy around, and that haven't changed since you got into this job.